You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Boy, Garry Kasparov answered a lot of my questions. First, he's launched a new platform, Kasparov Chess, which allows playing with other people, playing with the computer, solving puzzles, taking lessons, learning from thousands of educational videos. I've been learning more about chess using the videos on his platform, so check out KasparovChess.com. But he also answers questions about how he trained, how Magnus Carlsen trained, what's the difference between players now and players of his generation, who was world champion for 20 years, or almost 20 years, and now Magnus Carlsen is world champion. He answered questions about who he thinks might be the next world champion, adult improvement in different ways than the younger generations. And it's just so interesting. So if you enjoy this episode, write a review and check out Kasparov Chess. This is one of my favorite interviews. So Garry, I'm a beta user of Kasparov Chess. I really love it. It's different from chess.com and Lead Chess, and we could talk about that. What got you interested in starting your own platform? And let me just qualify one bit. Since the TV show The Queen's Gambit, you know, chess.com has experienced like unbelievable amount of signups. They have 64 million members now. More people are watching chess on Twitch than even watching Fortnite. And there's a whole area, and I am one of them, of adult improvers in chess that have come back to chess after, you know, I spent a lot of time on chess, but then, you know, life happens and you don't spend it. And now coming back as an adult improver trying to get back to where I was, it's amazing how many new resources there are. And then when I go on Kasparov Chess, I just love it, how you're bringing in the culture of chess and documentaries about chess and the lessons. I took a lesson from Anish Giri yesterday on, you know, video lesson on aggressive ways to counter e4. It was great. I loved it. But what got you into doing this? What inspired you to do Kasparov Chess?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you The Queen's Gambit And I also have to remind, you know, our listeners that I was a key consultant on chess issues and also on the Soviet side, you know, of the series. But we started this project, I would say, ages ago by modern standards. It was originated many years ago when we had a Grand Chess Tour event in London with Maxime Vachier-Lagraf playing very well and almost winning it. He's a leading French player.
And I should mention you have a documentary about him on Kasparov Chess.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
I really
enjoyed. Yes, he was. He at that time he was a rising star, and the French believed that he could challenge Magnus. Unfortunately, it didn't materialize, but he's still one of the top players. The result of this event in London in 2015 was that the French sponsor of MVL, Maxime Vachier-Lagraf, invited us to Paris to talk to Vivendi. About having a Grand Chess Tour event in Paris, and for the last 5 years we had this event in Paris as a part of Grand Chess Tour, and it happened that some of the top people in Vivendi, they were big chess fans. The number two guy in Vivendi, Stéphane Roussel, you know, he played in our fun competition, you know, when we had a grandmaster and a chess amateur, you know, joining, you know, as a team. So we had a very good reception from Vivendi, and they were interested in expanding this cooperation. And naturally, we talked about Chess Platform. So it all goes back to 2017. But again, things, you know, move slowly. It's a big corporation, and we looked for several options, because we also had a Grand Chess Tour St. Louis. That's one of the elements that we wanted to bring into the loop, and it also took time, and we eventually, you know, formalized all the agreements and had a concept, because it's entering this field is not an easy task, because as you said, it's crowded, and you have among many players you have two giants, chess.com and now Magnus Chess, former Chess 24. So competing with them, you know, requires a good strategy. And that's why our original plan was from day one to concentrate on the area where we could actually beat the competition. And that's about education. It's about learning. It's about legacy. And, you know, making sure that, you know, you can bring this entertainment and educational elements together. And I have to say that the success, phenomenal success of the Queen's Gambit was a big help, because our concept of doing these lessons, you know, on a Netflix format, makes people, you know, feel home, because now they all of a sudden they see something that resembles their experience with the series. The plan was to actually launch everything last year. But pandemics, you know, made big changes. So, for instance, I've been planning to record a new masterclass, and I will just come back a bit later, just describing the structure of this new masterclass. Because one I did 4 years ago in 2017, proved to be very successful. But I knew how to make improvements, and again, we already prepared everything for March 2020. I had to spend a week in Paris recording it, but we all know what's happened in March 2020. You know, the whole world, you know, went crazy. It was locked down. So we just had to reorganize our plans, and everything was slowing down. I was still recording my podcast episodes as a substitution for masterclass, but we had to postpone or delay all our plans about the launch. Now we again with 1 year delay,
you know,
so
Gary,
we're about to start a major action.
So Gary, let me ask you first: why do you think the Queen's Gambit TV show inspired so many people? A, people like me to come back to chess, and B, even people like my daughters who have never played chess in their lives, suddenly they're logging on to chess.com and reading, you know, basic books on chess and trying to learn. Like, what was it about the Queen's Gambit during the pandemic that inspired so many people?
Oh, you said during the pandemics. Naturally, you know, pandemics helped, you know, to make this series more popular and audience more receptive to the show. But I think the key element, the key factor of the success was a story behind it. Story, that's what people want to hear. And it's, we're now being fed by all sorts of sci-fi and fantasy, and it's just, or some extreme stories. Here is, it was fairly normal. I mean, this is, you had an orphan girl from Kentucky. So that's the, when you look at all these components that made all of a sudden, you know, that's the great story, that's the, created a chemistry, fantastic chemistry, they're all natural. So people can easily identify themselves with Beth Harmon, with other, members or just other characters there, because again, it's American, of course, but they're ordinary people. And also the show succeeded in presenting the psychological tension of the game. So this is, you could feel, how they just, they're concentrated. So, and again, this is something that people sitting there in their homes and they are being dragged in. This is a big battle. So you don't need to be on the baseball field or soccer field, to feel this tension. So, it's a success of an underdog. And it's not just a success of the underdog, it's chess for long. For long had this very, I would say, questionable reputation. People were afraid that if the kids play chess, it could somehow hurt their mental stability. You can become, dizzy, and the life is getting blurry because you're overwhelmed by these pieces. And stories, from the great literature, like Nabokov's Lucian Defense, or Stefan Zweig, chess novel, and of course Bobby Fischer. So there were so many examples where chess contributed to this kind of mental instability, and somehow this image, has been preserved over decades. And I've been fighting, all my professional life and even afterwards, as a retired player to push, the opposite image. And here it comes. Chess did not destroy Beth Harmon. To the contrary, it helped her to survive in her battle against her dependence on substances. So she could overcome her dependence on green peels and alcohol, and she actually grew as a character. So again, when you start adding all these elements, it's a chemistry. So you still need luck, but I think the many elements were there already, and pandemics basically put them together. It's like merge them in a mega successful story.
Again, you mentioned Kasparov Chess has competitors, and like take chess.com, it's a great, and by the way, one competitor was a chess platform I helped start back in the early 90s, which was the Internet Chess Club. But on your recommendation, I started using chess.com, and it's phenomenal. And so how do you, in terms of playing, even in terms of connecting with coaches and teachers and streamers, chess.com has a lot of content. I feel Kasparov Chess has more pure content. But how do you see yourself as a real differentiator?
Look, again, I had to just have to remind the audience. I had a failed experience 2 decades ago with Kasparov Chess, original Kasparov Chess, from 1999 to 2001, and many of the ideas that have been introduced then, so they playing a role now. But technology was not there. The internet boom was over, and we simply couldn't catch the audience. Now the technology helps us because it's not only the improvement with presentation, but also it's the on the receiver side. So people now can actually follow this from many other devices. So the environment is much better. But again, over the last 2 decades, we had a much stiffer competition. I think that this you use the word pure content. I think we can do a better job by actually attracting people of different levels, because the idea is that you will enjoy, you will be entertained, you will be learning about chess, no matter your, it's irrespectively to your experience or strengths. So that's why we will be using, the 8 different categories. So starting from the beginner, that's roughly, 1,000, to masters, it's 2,200. So that's, we want to make sure that, you know, everybody will have, you know, his or her, you know, place in the system. And that's what I learned, you know, after doing the original masterclass 4 years ago, as I mentioned, because it's the concept at the time didn't have space for this, for the greats. And I had to struggle to make sure that, you know, I can squeeze as much information as I can, you know, in this roughly 1,300 to 1,700 window. This is using rating, with few elements for people who were, you know, above this 1,700. Now, my masterclass will be divided in three categories: beginners, so the advanced players, and strong players, club level and higher. And the way we will present the lessons, so we'll connect them to the puzzles, and you'll be always, you know, you'll be always rated so within your section. So it's clearly that, you know, this the site will help you to navigate in the friendly waters. And also, we are introducing more of the video content. Said it's Netflix format, and that is what people want. You know, they want more. You know, more physical contact. They want to see that the on the other side you don't have a robot or just, you know, liveless chessboard, but someone, you know, like Anish Giri or Maxim Vachelegrav or Almira Skripchenko. So we already have eight masters ambassadors who joined Kasparov Chess, and we're going to expand it. We have 750 lessons recorded now, and there's more to come. I have to mention also 52,000 puzzles, and they will begin. We'll be adding more and more of them. As I said in my very brief introduction, I said it's my legacy, now build yours. We want people to feel that they're part of community. That's also an element that I think it's missing in our other sides, because they're big and you feel like, you know, just a pawn in this ocean of events. And we want to make sure that everybody will find his or her way to establish their own legacy on our side.
It's interesting because on some of these other platforms, the focus is on play, which I know, you know, there's the play section on Kasparov Chess as well. You could play other players, but it took me, I was on chess.com or Elite Chess for over a month before I realized there was forums, and the forums were, I don't want to say they were low quality, but they were just sort of random. And I think if you have forums where you're moderating them with strong players and really directing the discussion and answering questions and things like that, that would be very powerful, I think, for the community.
Absolutely. So look, chess playing zones, it's a must. You must have it, and you can make improvements. I know that we're trying to make sure that, you know, there will be few bugs, because you always have to work, you know, just with that, making all these improvements. It will have a strong anti-cheating system, but you cannot beat other platforms on playing zone, and it takes time. I mean, I think by the way, this the best playing zone, I think it's Elite Chess.
I'm glad you say that, because that's where I'm the highest rated. So I'm glad you said.
Okay,
Elite Chess.
Well, I think it's the most sophisticated one, that, you know, just it's the most resilient to cheating and at virtually no bugs. But at the end of the day, it's just people are not only to play, and that's what we want to emphasize. It's community sense, and that's why the contacts are very important. I mentioned Chess our ambassadors, but I also have to say that I will be there personally. So this is, I will spend at least 5 hours every month, you know, on the site, just talking to people, making presentations, maybe moving the pieces, you know, playing with some. So that's this, some of the lucky winners of our sweepstakes. So it's very important that this contact is there. So I think there should be always interaction between the site and the platform and the customers. And we also having some kind of a hotline that will allow customers to submit their proposals, it will help us to eliminate bugs, but also we want the site to have this interactive element and to always be, you know, at the cutting edge. So we want to make sure that everything that is happening there, you know, is up to the satisfaction of our audience.
Well, I've been really impressed with the lessons you have on there, because there's various platforms have good lessons like chessable.com and so on. But to get a player of the quality of Anish Giri, as just as an example, I mean, I just watched the Candidates Tournament. He did very well in that. And then to watch a video lesson from him where just right away I was learning incredible things I never knew before. And to just have that essentially free on the platform, that was really great. And I haven't seen that on other platforms. I know there are videos on other platforms, but it's not a focus of these other platforms. But let me ask you this. What do you think? A lot of adults now, like me, but millions of others, are coming back to chess and asking, can I improve? It's a new world now. These young kids, the masters are getting younger and younger. The skills are getting, you know, the ability to get skills is improving because of computers and so on. I come back to this whole new world, and then I also realize my memory is not as good, my calculating is not as fast. Like, do you think adult improvement is possible?
Oh, absolutely. It's the so what's wrong with us, like adult, you know? I'm 58, so just learning new things. So I think it's at in our age category, what is important is for us to feel good about it. So this is, as long as we're being entertained, so we're happy to digest new information, because look, there's so many things you can do. And if this is boring, you know, and if it's just teaching, yeah, I think just, you know, it's somehow it might hurt our pride. So we don't want to be taught. But if you can do it, you know, just in a way that it's entertaining, it's a video. And by the way, you mentioned the videos, high quality videos. This is most of these lessons recorded in a professional studio in Paris. And as we want to keep this quality, again, this is the Kasparov Chess, we'll try to win the audience by the quality of the presentations, both by the content and also the wrapping paper. So because, you know, making it pleasant for your eyes and just making you feel good, this is a very important element of winning the hearts of the audience. And I think that is while we will be building special programs for kids, and I just, you know, I'm planning, you know, just eventually to introduce the old idea that comes back to the original Kasparov Chess 20 years ago. It's the World School Chess Championship. But right now, we want to make sure that adult audience will be very comfortable. And I think that there's so many ways we can make them feel good. And as we already discussed, the Queen's Gambit, you know, just open this appetite for learning chess. And we'll do our utmost to capitalize on this new opportunity.
So how do you think adult learning is different from kids who are learning? So let's say kids, they memorize these opening variations very well. They solve a lot of tactical puzzles, so they calculate fast. I feel like what is there a difference? What is the difference? Like, what are the best ways for adults to learn?
Look, of course, there's a difference because, you know, for kids, learning is natural. So that's they learn about life. So that's why if, you know, they can learn music, they can learn chess, they can learn swimming, they can learn whatever. So this is how their life being built, and their brains just, you know, they're open to find new information, they're always hungry for new information. That's life. Now with us, it's different because we are overloaded with information. So and for us to learn something new, again, we have to be really encouraged. Unless you are encouraged, again, I can watch a movie or I can read a book, but learning new things, you know, it will not happen unless you feel that, you know, it's so good. You need to feel the engagement. So that's as you're engaged, and it's somehow, you know, it will make your life a bit more exciting. So you add some new angles to your routine life, and that's what I think, you know, is happening now with chess. And again, Kasparov Chess will be there to help people feel good about learning.
And do you think, like right now, I mean, when you were, you became the world champion and you were the youngest world champion ever. And now you see people getting younger and younger as they get to that level of ability. Like you have, I mean, Carlsen is 30 and he's already saying things like, oh, I used to calculate faster when I was younger. And he doesn't think he'll be playing professionally when he's 40, whereas you went on well past 40. And now you have also people like Alireza Faruja, who's 18. Like all these younger players are getting to that almost that 2800 level so young. What's changed? Like how, like I remember, you know, you look at the 50s, you know, people like, well, even earlier, you look at the 20, Emanuel Lasker was world champion for 27 years. He was playing professionally in his 60s. Like what's happened over the past century that has pushed down the level of elite grandmasters so low? And this happened in many fields, not just chess.
Look, life is getting faster. I'm sure that for people at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of 20th century, life also looked fast compared to what was happening before. So that's the they can move around. So they had transatlantic ships, new fast trains that could cross, you know, the continents. But if you look at the chess calendar in Lasker's time, so he didn't play many tournaments. He could, you know, he could have a couple of years without even just, you know, playing one event, one game, one serious game. So, and that's why, you know, he could preserve energy and just play chess competitively, you know, just until his 60s. So he was 66 when he just had his last successful event in Moscow. And one of Moscow international tournaments. Even just when just you look at the next generation, like Botvinnik. Botvinnik could keep his title until he was 52. But still, you know, it was relatively slow motion calendar. Botvinnik could also have a year or two without being actively engaged in chess competitions. Then you move to the next generation of champions, you know, like Spassky and Fischer, and they're really getting younger. So Karpov became world champion at age 24. So I became world champion at age 22, which was quite an exception at the time. But already in the 90s, we saw young players, and they, you know, it was my challengers like. Nigel Short was he was 28 when he challenged me in 93, and Vishy Anand was I think 26 when he challenged me in 95. So that's a new generation of players, but the rhythm of chess competitions changed dramatically. It just, you know, it is, they had to play more, and which means, you know, you needed more energy, more stamina. It's not that you could go on forever. So I knew already in the 90s that probably I would quit chess in my mid 40s. Actually, I did it when I just before I turned 42, because it just, you know, required so much time for preparation, and also I didn't have the same, you know, the same excitement by going into this in the whole process, because for me chess was not just about winning but about making the difference. And I knew at the time that, you know, I almost exhausted my ability to make the difference. So yeah, I changed so many things in the game of chess. I introduced computers into the preparation. So and I thought, okay, that's enough. And probably it was a very good choice, because the game actually even was speeding up. It's the I was playing one of my last tournaments in 2004 and faced young Magnus Carlsen. So that's probably was a good opportunity, because I could beat him at the time. So yes, I was, yeah, he was 14. Actually, he was not even yet 14. He was turning 14 that year, and I was 41. So it's the in the last 15 years we saw even, you know, just even further increase of this pace. There are more events. They play. They need more preparation. But also computers, they are just forcing players to fully concentrate on their preparation, and just to make sure that they will not be victims of the superior preparation of their opponents. So life changed. Chess has changed, and it's not surprising. And that's why, you know, having younger players making inroads, it's a very natural process. So you mentioned Ali Reza Firouzja. So great talent. So he's just turned 18. And if you look at the time frame, so that's probably, you know, the most likely next champion because he's 12 years younger than Magnus. Again, it's not carved in the stone. This is not, you know, something that, you know, you can guarantee by saying, oh, this is the player who is going to be next world champion. But, you know, this is generation wise, you know, you see these teenagers, they are coming in, and I think this process it's inevitable, and I think most of the players in their 30s. They will, you know, they will be facing very tough challenges, and I doubt very much that they can survive in this sort of never-ending quest by younger players that are just trying to replace them. And when Magnus says that he would quit, you know, when he's 40 or so, I mean, he understands realistically that while he's still a dominant force in chess and he's still playing some phenomenal games. He is making mistakes. He is making blunders. He's just, you know, he's not as impeccable as he used to be several years ago.
So this is what I mean, like about you know, adults who are coming back to the game or adults who want to learn the game. What is different? Like, why do when you're older, your brain is no longer like a machine. You have to kind of deal. There's more. It goes from knowledge to wisdom. Say, like, how do you teach the wisdom as opposed to just teaching the knowledge that these kids are absorbing?
Yeah, but let's separate, you know, this is the professional chess players and adults who are chess fans. I have plenty of wisdom. So that's just, if you ask me, you know, how you should play here or there, so I think I, in my philosophy or even in some solving some of the problems, I could probably compete even with Magnus. Probably, yeah. So this is definitely in philosophy. But I could see tactics when I'm sitting here in front of my computer, you know, or a chessboard. But then when you play, you know, that's a different story. It's about concentration. This is about your instincts, you know. That's this. And look, I have other things. I have family. I have kids. I have other. Yeah, this is, your mind is overloaded, and you cannot just switch it off. This is not your mind is not, you know, it's not a computer, and you can say, okay, fine. Now I just, you know, I download another program. So and you know, I put this one to sleep. No, so this is to switch off, you know, other brain activities and to concentrate on chess by making sure that, you know, 100% or at least, you know, just it's considerable portion of your mental energy is concentrated on the game of chess is impossible. So that's why, and I've been playing, you know, chess for fun for many years now since I left professional chess. And I know that, you know, this, it's every year, you know, I could see that it's just, you know, it's getting weaker and weaker. So I did better, you know, just in since I left professional chess. So in 2009, 2010, I just played a little bit, and I felt, you know, I felt quite good about it. 2015, 2016, you can see this, it's all, you know, going down. For me, that's the big point was when I played Caruana, the 960 chess, the Fischer chess. And, you know, I outplayed him in most of the games. But terrible blunders. I couldn't stop blundering pieces.
Were you upset at yourself? Were you getting angry at yourself?
Look, you know, I used to be very upset when I lost, you know, but now I understand this inevitable. There's a sense of inevitability. Of course I'm upset, you know, but at the end of the day, I cannot fight nature. I cannot fight time. So I know people always enjoy watching me at the board, and I'm trying to accommodate their expectations. But also, you know, I'm always telling you that, look, guys, you know, I will be there. I will play, you know, an event. I will play again this 960 event in St. Louis this September. But, you know, don't have high expectations. And I can play some good games. You know, if I play one good game, you know, that's enough, because, you know, people can see, wow, that's old spark, you know, the lion still has, you know, few teeth left, you know, just to go after his prey.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you could try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Obviously, world champion level players like yourself, like Carlson, like Botvinnik, your old teacher, and so on, they sort of have their unique styles. You could tell a Kasparov game. You could tell a Petrosian game. You might even be able to tell a Carlson game. You were known for your, as you called it, your fighting chess, very aggressive, very tactical, very attacking. That's at least what you were known for. Carlson, on the other hand, is known for squeezing the life out of a position and then slowly grinding out a win with very subtleties and nuances. It's a completely opposite style to you, it seems, on the surface. Why do you think that change has occurred? Has that change occurred in the world of chess because of computers? It's harder to be it's harder to know how to be aggressive, or is it just a difference in personality between you and Carlson and other players?
I don't think that's a trend, because when you look at the history of chess in the last 50 years, or even just 100 years, so you always see that that's the world champions and the top players, they had different styles. And very often you had, the player with one specific style, beating another player with an opposite style, and then being beaten by the player with a similar style of his opponent that he beat before. So for instance, if you look at, okay, let's start with my experience. So I played Karpov, very different style. So this is ice and fire. So when I beat Karpov, then I just, I lost to Kramnik, and Kramnik's style is more like Karpov style. So then, Kramnik losing to Anand, and Anand's style is closer to my style. And then you had, Magnus beating Anand. I'm talking only about World Championship matches.
Yes.
And then you mentioned Alireza Feruje. That's more of the my style or Vishy Anand. So he's yet to become the world champion, but you see that this is the bright star of the new generation is more like Kasparov Anand style than Kramnik or Magnus. But again, when you talk about style, you should be very careful of not misleading, your audience, because it's in chess. I think the style is of course very important, influential. It's, it's like in tennis. You have players with a very powerful serve who are rushing to the net, or those who play from the back line. In soccer, you also had, very aggressive attacking style, like Brazilian style or Italian catenaccio, more defensive style. But on the top, level, so you have to do many things, well. So you still have your preferences. You still have your, strongest suit. But, you have to be able to do the other things. Magnus Carlsen, you're right. He knows how to squeeze life out of the position and just to use minimal resources to torment his opponents and actually, and then to score. But he can have a massive attack. In Kasparov style. I can show you a few games of Magnus and say, oh, that's more played by Anand or Kasparov. No, he played by Magnus. So that's why, again, it says, don't, get confused that it's by saying, oh, Magnus can do only this. That's his ultimate strength, but he can do many other things as well. The winner, it's in when you have two different, school of thought, two styles, clashing. The winner is the player who can actually who can do two things. One is invade opponent's territory and just to make sure that he can manage to survive there. So that's on. But also to make sure that most of the battles are taking place on his territory. So that's the reason why I lost to Kramnik in the year 2000, because I have been trying to actually win the battle on the territory that where he felt most comfortable. So that was a big mistake, and even player of my caliber and with my experience could make this mistake. So the reason I beat Karpov is that, you know, I managed to actually fight well against Karpov on his territory, and he, in definitely in the last match, he tried to actually fight with me on territory that definitely fit my style better. So that's the playing very sharp lines with black pieces, for instance, in Ruy Lopez, and that's, you know, it's no matter how good his position was after the opening, he still had to fight on the territory that was more of Kasparov than his.
What would you say, like, for you at your peak, Carlsen at his peak, Botvinnik at his peak, what's the difference between the number one player and, let's say, the number 10 player in the world, or the number 20 player? Because in tennis, for instance, I've heard it said that there's really no physical difference between the number one tennis player in the world and the number 100 tennis player in the world, but the difference is psychology and who has the determination to be number one in the world. Like, what would you say is the difference between number one in chess and number 20 in chess?
Number one is number one. Number one is it. Yeah, I want to say world champion, but, you know, we mentioned Botvinnik, and there was no rating system in Botvinnik's time, but I doubt very much that he was number one. You know, that he was very good in the matches, but at one point Smyslov was probably, you know, number one, and then again Botvinnik's played rarely, and I think it's his while he was a number one in, I'm not sure, late 30s, but definitely in late 40s, early 50s, he could remain the world champion because he knew how to play the matches. He was a great match player, especially rematches, you know, how to prepare. This is a genius of preparation. The gap between the best player and the rest of the field, you know, it's this is one of the, you know, one of the signs of the greatness. And Fischer's gap, you know, was phenomenal in 1971-72, but it didn't last because Fischer left chess. So we didn't know for how long he could actually keep up with these new challenges. I stayed on top for quite a while, so and I managed always to keep the gap between me and the rest of the field. Though, of course, it has been shrinking with new generation coming in, and you know, my age, you know, me adding years to my age. Magnus at one point had, I mean, just a clear gap between Magnus and the rest. So I would say that since he won the title, it's 2014, 2015. So that's the, and to these days, I mean, he's still the top player. And though I think, you know, he's, as we mentioned, he's not as inevitable as he used to be. You know,
but let's say at his peak, what separates him from the rest of the field? What is it what is that extra oomph that separates a world champion, a number one?
That's a secret. I don't know. I mean, you may say the difference is just tiny. Yes, just, but that's tiny difference makes all the difference, because, you know, he it's not just psychology. He knows, you know, things just a little bit better here and there, and it's, but in overall, you know, it creates an image. It creates a unit, a fighting unit that is unstoppable. And when I was number one player, so I would say mine was energy. I had more energy than anybody else. I could play chess. I could concentrate on the game. I could spend time on preparation. So I was all, you know, all fire, you know, that's at the board. And also huge energy and discipline combination, which is, as you know, that's important, you know, just to bring together at my training sessions. So Magnus is Magnus has, I would say, probably very pure chess talent. That's why it reminds me of Karpov, Capablanca. So he's not so much intuitive player as myself, but he's just, you know, everything comes together. So that's as he sees, you know, how the board is all the configuration. So that's this, finds probably the ideal trajectory for these pieces. And also, I think the Magnus, I would add one more thing about Magnus' domination. He was the only player of the top, you know, of top 10, I know, that who could prepare with computers without being hijacked by the screen. So that's this, he could look at the screen, and he could still, you know, you know, sort of separate himself from machine's recommendations. So he could always, you know, preserve his immunity from machine's influence, and that helped him to achieve the best combination of his chess human creative input and machine's brute force.
And so you've coached a lot of top players. Like, you know, what would be the sort of things you would coach a young Magnus?
I did coach young Magnus.
Yes, I know. So what sorts of things would you teach him at that level? And I know this is a little further afield than just the lessons you have on Kasparov chess, obviously, but I'm trying to get a sense of learning in general. Like, what sort of things would you add to Carlsen at when you coached him?
You're talking about, you know, just it's a top player in the world. So Magnus, in 2009, when we started our work, so he was already top five. And at one point, he was even briefly number one in rating, but he was, you know, top five player. I looked at his games, I studied them, and I believed that I could be of great help because our styles were different. So that's why what I thought was important is actually to help him to see every position through my lenses, to add, you know, to his qualities. He knew how to play different, you know, certain positions, and he didn't need my advice to exercise his natural talent. But, you know, on the intuitive side, on more aggressive chess, you know, dynamic chess, I was superior. So that's why, you know, he learned from me how to manage his position. So it made him more universal as a player. And also, I think I helped him to build his own opening preparation framework, because his opening preparation at the time was not up to the level.
Let's say now, you know, on Kasparov chess, you're going to have, you know, many lessons geared towards kids, many lessons geared towards adults, lessons about openings, tactics, strategy, and so on. What do you think? Let's say someone's just beginning to come to chess now, and they're 30 years old, but they want to learn, they want to be pretty good. A, what should they focus on? And B, how far do you think they can get?
Speak about lessons, you know, that's, and puzzles. So that's this. We didn't mention that, but is the, so we, you know, our site is a freemium business model. So that's why, you know, this is the, you have, you know, many things free. So that's like playing zone, and this is news articles and podcasts and 8 puzzles a day. So, and 20% of the lesson content. So it's all free. So it's the, and then of course, you know, you can have the access for the full site, and that's one of our advantages. I just have to mention that is that we will be offering, I think, very competitive prices. So $14 a month or $120 annually. So that will give you access to masterclass and every corner of the of our site. And again, this is the we strongly believe that lessons, and again, it's the entertaining element of the lessons. That's what will bring people in. And as I already said, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, you will not be lost in these jungles, because there's so many lessons and so many puzzles. And we will always help you to navigate and make sure that you stay, you know, in the territory where, you know, you feel comfortable and safe.
Yeah. So. What should somebody, again, like what should an adult or a young adult or a kid, what should they focus on first, you think, to get better?
Look, you know, again, it's depends, you know, what is your target? So if you are a kid, you want to get, you know, just, you know, into chess, and that's one story. If you are an adult looking for intellectual entertainment, that's another story. So, and again, we want to make sure that, you know, whatever your goals are, so we're here to help. So again, this is, it's not, you know, that's you have, you know, that's the A, B, C, D up to Z, you know, plan. So naturally you have to learn, the moves, and you have to know how to play. But I assume you already know something about the game of chess. So, and then again, just tell us what's your plan. And the masterclass that I will be recording, so will be very much, you know, based on these kind of, expectations. So I learned from the first masterclass, the original one, recorded 4 years ago, and I will make sure that this high-quality production, again, it will be all, the shooting will be done in Paris, so in the professional studio, so that will, you know, will please not only your eyes, but also your appetite for learning the game of chess.
For adults, do you think they should focus on openings? Do you think, well, like, if you were to advise someone who, let's say they're they're 30 years old and they saw the Queen's Gambit and they're like, I want to be a chess master or a chess expert or whatever. What would you advise that adult to do?
It's a little bit too late for a chess career, but it's just the, yeah, but it's, again, it's a combination of things. So that's the master class that I will do. So that's the advanced and a club level. That will be great help. I would still concentrate on general things, on just tactics, on strategy. And then you just, you know, we have lessons on the openings. So but openings, I would not start with the openings because it's very important that you improved your understanding of the game. So because all the openings, you know, that's at that level, they just, you know, you can survive them. You can play some very lame openings. But at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's your ability to navigate in the middle game, your knowledge of the end game. So that's what helps you to win. If you want to improve and you want not just to enjoy chess, but you want to enjoy and win. So then, you know, I would say that looking at the middle games and end games would be a priority. And we will definitely make sure that, you know, we will have the most friendly map for you to navigate.
And I should mention, you also have a podcast, Kasparov Chess. I just listened to the most recent episode where you described a tournament when you were very young in 1976, and your mentor and teacher, Botvinnik, kind of had to make a call to you to keep you going a little bit. Do you want to describe real quickly that story? I thought it was a beautiful story.
Look, originally it was not, you know, our intention, but since, you know, we had to slow down and couldn't do the videos, so we decided I would do a podcast, you know, with these episodes. So I'm planning to record many more of them. So the first series will end with my entry into the adult professional world in 1978, I thought it would be very, you know, very touching to tell stories. Again, it's the resemblance with the Queen's Gambit. The stories about relations. It's me, my mother, my teacher. So he's calling me. Those are the stories that make people, you know, excited because they learn something. You know, it's personal experience, and it adds, you know, human element to the game of chess. But Vinik's advice was always most valuable, and he knew how to encourage me, how to make sure that, you know, I'm not, you know, demoralized if I just, you know, if I was not doing well. You'll learn more about our relations with him because it was quite rocky. So, and it's eventually it heated to the point when I was a world champion that our political differences made it impossible to cooperate. But it was my great teacher, and I always felt grateful for what he did for me in the 70s and in the even 80s. You know, his advice, his, you know, wisdom, and his calm always, you know, helped me to stay the course.
And, you know, a lot of people compare chess. There's many metaphors to chess and business, chess and life, chess and other aspects of life. You, of course, are involved in everything from politics to cyber security. How do you see? Do you see chess helping you in these other areas of life?
No. It's not about chess. It's about me. So that's the what chess did is help me to understand so the decision making process, and that's the you can find more in my first non-chess book, How Life Imitates Chess, when I talked about, you know, my chess career and about decisions that I made and some right or wrong and what I learned from making these decisions and how this experience could be useful, not only just for me, but for the readers. The aptitude for playing chess is nothing else than the aptitude for playing chess. Now, the real issue is, what can you do with your chess experience? How can you benefit from your chess experience, your ability to understand the nature of your decisions and why something, you know, went wrong and so how to improve it into other areas of your life? But the fact is that I'm involved in many things, you know, ranging from human rights to cybersecurity. It's just, you know, it's my nature. I just, you know, I was always a curious person and I also wanted to make the difference. That's what I learned from my mother. And I believe that, you know, in every endeavor, you know, just it's where I just, you know, I invest my time and efforts and energy. I'm making the difference. Not as great as in the game of chess, of course. You know, I understand that, you know, my impact outside of chess is limited compared to what I did as a chess world champion. But still, I'm making the difference. So whether it's, you know, human rights fight, global issues, where I just, you know, I believe my voice helps many people to regain their confidence and continue their fighting against dictatorships and other thugs, you know, who are abusing human rights, and human machine collaboration, where also my experience fighting the machines and then working with machines helps people to become more optimistic about the future.
So when do you see, you know, Kasparov Chess is in beta now. I've been happily using its resources as a beta user. What do you see as the official launch date?
Oh, we are, you know, we are launching now. This is as, you know, we're speaking now. Just since it's a week May 10, and that's a week of our official launch. We're going to announce sort of the full scope of cooperation between Vivendi and the Grand Chess Tour, because that's becomes a part of the Kasparov Chess. So this is speaking about broadcast. We will have the full access to the Grand Chess Tour events, and St. Louis Chess Club Grand Chess Tour. Actually, will be a part of this venture. So that was the original idea, and it's all going to be announced now. And so we will have our own very strong broadcast section, because as we know, Grand Chess Tour had set up new standards of presenting the game of chess, and we have great commentators, and it's all part of the venture. So you will see now that it's not just entertainment on the learning side, but it's also will be more entertainment on broadcast.
Will you get involved with like streaming and chess streamers? You know, like someone like Hikaru is a very successful chess streamer, and there's other, and Ali Reza actually is a good streamer. You know, they stream on platforms like Twitch.
It's definitely, we are going to be very active on all these platforms. So yeah, I will be doing it as a big event with Hikaru on May 14th. So it's on Twitch. So and it will, you know, it's the, again, it's just, if we want to be successful, so if we want to live up to the expectations of our audience, so we must have a strong presence on the streaming platforms.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And just as a last comment, you know, I think of the chess players in the 50s and 60s, and they would be so austere and wear suits for every tournament. And now I watch these streamers who are 2700 level, maybe, you know, just as good as these prior champions, and they're throwing chairs when they make blunders and cursing. It's like a different world. But that's why I appreciate how Kasparov Chess is going to look at how culturally chess is appearing in society now.
Yeah, look, it is a different world. It's not just, you know, chess, different world. It's a different world, period. And yes. And that's why you have different habits, you have different norms, you have different standards. But as you pointed out, it's very important for us to keep the image of the chess intact. It's a great game, and it deserves full respect. And I grew up in a different world, so I always played, unless it was too hot, I always played in having, you know, the suit and a tie. That's what I learned, you know, from the older generation, because I was at stage, and I was always, you know, fighting my colleagues who said, big deal. No, it's your stage, you know, you have to serve the audience. I always knew about this interactive element. Obviously, when I played Karpov, you know, that was, you know, this is always limited by the big audiences in the halls we play, in the theaters, because this is the others, you know, could fall on radio. This is the technical means to transmit the games were limited. But even today, you know, just I think it's presenting the, you know, the quality of visual quality of the game. It's very important. And while, you know, you can hardly imagine people playing, you know, from from their home, you know, online events and wearing collar and tie. But certain norms and it's probably this, it's slightly changed now. It's not about collar and tie, but it's more about quality of the presentation. So we want to make sure that the game of chess, it will have class. Mentioning the Queen's Gambit, also one of the elements that made it so successful, it was classy. You look at the clothes, you look at the environment, so classy. It's no longer the game played in the dark corner of the cafe. So this is the game that played in theaters. You know, you have people following it. So it's all the traditional intrigue, but also it has a class. So we want to make sure that Kasparov Chess will, you know, live up to the expectations of people who want to learn chess, who want to be entertained, but he wants to do it in class.
Well, I have to say, so far you're doing it. Like, I've been using Kasparov Chess. I've taken video lessons, watched documentary, solved puzzles, played some games. Everything is top notch, and I wish you huge luck and success with Kasparov Chess.
You.
I'm sure it will be. And again, I was surprised how much I learned from just one or two videos also on the platform.
And there are many of them. There will be eventually, you know, there's thousands of them. Now we are getting closer to the first thousand.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to continue using it, and I hope many people use it. Good luck again, and congratulations on launching it this week. Thank you, Gary, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.